This podcast is brought to you by The Shift.
It's story time!
Hello and welcome back to the Storytime Podcast. My name is Claire. I go by Clizzer on the internet, and this is the podcast where people tell me their stories. And this week I have with me Jerry Fu. Hello.
Hi, Claire.
How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Certainly. Yeah. My name is Jerry Fu. I am a conflict resolution coach for Asian American leaders. I started my business in October of 2020 in the middle of the pandemic. And my website is www.adaptingleaders.com. There is a free PDF you can download, which is a simple framework for hard conversations. And you can also find me on LinkedIn. That is the one social media platform that I use to connect with other people.
And I'll have all your links in the description on YouTube and in the show notes on the audio platforms as well. But you have a story for me this week.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's this is the story that all my pharmacy friends like me to share at all the parties and things like that. So happy to volunteer and entertain others with it as well. So in the course of my journey before I became a leadership coach, I have been practicing for 16 years as a pharmacist. And we can unpack the actual details of that journey in just a second. But one of the crazier things that happened along the way was I ended up working for a smaller chain pharmacy that focused specifically on pain management. And so on one hand, this was a niche that was not a lot of competition. And so that was good because we didn't want to just get drowned out by bigger chain pharmacies, things like that. But the other problem is that you are under two levels of scrutiny. Number one is the DEA is always going to be monitoring you because these are the kind of drugs that get under the radar. But also people who want to steal these drugs also know when you have a bevy of high profile street medications or medications that can sell for a lot on the street, people will find a way to get them, whether it's through fraudulent prescriptions or just taking them by force. And so this is a story about what happened when people tried to strong arm us into taking these medications. And so I'll start up the story like this. This was April 2012. It was a Monday after I'd gotten back from a friend's wedding. I was barely starting with the company for about 2 weeks now. So this is early. I was desperate for work. And this is a company that my friends had got me on and money was tight. So I had to really make the most of my time with them and show them that I was worth keeping around to put on payroll. Anyway, around lunchtime, I am in the back room with two other technicians. I have no idea what's going on in the front. And as I'm about to finish my pear, because I had a pear for dessert, and as I'm about to finish this pear and get ready to clock back in, we hear a boom, and we're like, my technicians there say, what was that? And we hear two more, boom, boom. And we're like, okay, those are gunshots. So let's get underneath the table. And as I'm waiting, as we're all waiting to figure out what the heck is going on out there, I'm like, I try to take another bite of my pear.
Gotta finish that pear.
I know. And my technicians are like, what are you doing? And I was like, this might be the last food I eat. This thing's going to oxidize. No one wants a brown pear. Like, I'm going to finish this. And so, sure enough, we hear sirens and cops come in. They find us in the back. They escort us out. And as we're walking out the front, because there was only one door leading back out into the patient lobby and back outside, we saw the corpse of the man who tried to rob us. And yeah, that was, I had never seen anything that close like that. So that was my take on what happened. And so now I can go into the full story of everything that played out while we were eating lunch and then finding out the hard way that we were being robbed. So that the story starts like this. As I said, this is in April. There's a light drizzle outside our pharmacy. This is not in a good area of Houston. It's on the north side of Houston. It's just an area you don't want to be around later at night. Anyway, this pharmacy, knowing that they had you know, it was not a great area, not a safe area, and we had high profile drugs. So we hired an older security guard named Jim. And a quick tangent with Jim, the first time he met me, he's a goofy older white man. And the first time he meets me, he actually bows. And I'm just like, okay, I don't understand why. Okay, you know, that's cute, right? And Jim was the kind of guy who his main duty was to escort patients back to their cars, you know, things like that. But the problem was when he would overstep his boundaries and he would actually become advocates for the patients. Like at one point he came back in with the patient and he was like, why is this patient's copay so high? We're like, Jim, we're not paying you to be their friend. We're paying you to keep us safe. Right. And so on this particular midday, it was a big day for the pharmacy because we had a lot of high profile people within the company also there. Corporate had come down from Dallas because they said, hey, you know, money's tight. We're going to go down into the Houston Med Center and try to drum up some business. And we also had our security and compliance officer, a guy named Johnny Hatcher, who actually was retired from the Department of Public Safety and actually wrote most of Texas narcotics law into practice. And so when he retired from DPS, the company, you know, hired him to be our security and compliance guy because we wanted to dispense these high profile meds. And so anyway, so Johnny happened to be doing an audit at the pharmacy this day. And so, you know, a lot of people running around. So anyway, so Jim, as it was drizzling and, you know, as he's escorts a patient, as he's walking back to the pharmacy, so what happened was we had turned away. We didn't know this until later. There was a patient we had turned away for doctor shopping. Basically, he goes around to multiple doctors faking the same symptoms and, you know,
get multiple prescriptions.
Yeah, up for the same pain medications. And so initially we turned him away, actually. Like there's a great database in place that, you know, identifies people and they say, hey, you know, if these guys are, you know, going to multiple clinics, getting the same meds, you know, you can check that. And so we turned him away. Except today, he decided, well, if I can't get him my fake scripts, I'm going to take him by force. So he came in an unmarked car with a gun and snuck up behind Jim as he was walking back to the pharmacy. And so it was drizzling this day. And so Jim had a poncho on. And so the guy just snuck behind Jim and just grabs his sleeves and vroom, and now Jim's a hostage. And so it's like, great. Now he's actually useful, but not to us. Right? It's like he's a hostage now. So anyway, the robber drags Jim in with him into the patient lobby. And there's like two plastic, you know, reinforced windows, like where our cashiers sit. And, you know, the robber points the gun at one of my friends who's a cashier and he's like, let me in. And so there's this giant door, you know, in the front that's keypad lock. And, you know, they let him in because we don't want her to get her face blown in because she tried to stand up for herself. Anyway, so the robber steps into the pharmacy with Jim. And so I'll do my best to describe this. Like at about his 10 o'clock is a giant gun safe that has all the drugs like OxyContin, things like that. And at about his like in the back northwest corner or like about his 11 o'clock, there is an office where my manager and Johnny are sitting in the office because they were talking about something back there. The cashiers are at about the robber's 2 or 3 o'clock, I guess they're to his right. And then in the far back right about his 1 o'clock is Wayne, one of the pharmacists. Wayne is a former Marine stationed in Vietnam. So he's a vet, but older guy, no filter. And so anyway, the robber quickly figures out, okay, if Wayne's one of the pharmacists, then he probably knows how to get into the safe and get me the medications that I want. So the robber pushes Jim up to Wayne. And of course, Jim just is very good at restating the obvious.
There's a robber here.
And Wayne actually laughs at him. Like, he's like, Jim, you can't joke around with this stuff, man. And I guess here's where this, what you said earlier comes into handy, right? The robber just goes, I'm not fucking around, man. And jams his gun into Wayne's ribs and proceeds to take Wayne over to the safe. He's like, I want you to empty out this safe and give me what I want, right? And so Wayne's like, okay, man, okay. And so as the robber is dragging Wayne over to the gun safe to open it up, and the door, you know, is opening up this way to where the office is. And so initially the robber sees Judy, my manager and Johnny in the office, and he looks up and he's like, hands where I can see him. So, you know, they show their hands. And so as Wayne is opening the safe door, it kind of obscures the robber's view of Judy and Johnny. And as the robber's trying to bark out orders and make sure Wayne gets all the drugs that he needs, Johnny is a peace officer and has a holster on his left ankle. And so Johnny discreetly reaches down to his left ankle where his gun is. And as soon as he pulls it out, you know, one, two, boom. And, you know, that's where the first gunshot came. And he shoots the robber in the chest, except that the guy was wearing Kevlar. So, yeah, he came prepared. And so the guy, you know, gets knocked back, drops his gun, tries to scramble for it. We hear the second gunshot, boom. And, you know, the guy is still not, he's still not down. He's still trying to go for his gun. And then Johnny said, hey, you know, third time I just shot for mass. The guy bled out from his side and died. Yeah, at the pharmacy. And so, yeah. And then, you know, just to give you the whole roll of things that happened. So we're waiting outside, waiting for, you know, the cops to tell us what to do and everything else like that. You know, the whole thing's covered in police tape. And what's hilarious is that, you know, corporate was away from this the whole time because they were down in the med center. You know, they left about 11 o'clock. The guy came in and robbed us about 1:15 in the afternoon. And then it was just hilarious because by the time corporate gets back and there, you know, they see sirens everywhere and yellow tape. And they're like, what happened? And we're like, yep, it's happy Monday to you, right? And then, yeah, it was just funny because there was a bullet hole in one of the pharmacy windows, I guess, after all this went out because of some of the ricocheting, I guess, of the bullets. And it was just hilarious because like every cop, we would watch every cop walk by, notice the bullet hole in the glass. And then they would kind of make a hand gesture and just kind of, you know, trajectory over to the, you know, where the bullet should have gone. But then they never actually would like find the bullet. And we're just sitting there thinking, why, like, why are they doing this? Like, I don't get it. So yeah, it was just a lot to process that day. And then what was unfortunate was that since Wayne is a vet, right, it triggered his PTSD.
I was wondering if that was going to.
Yeah, so he had to get about 3 weeks of counseling, you know, before he was able to resume work. But even then, he just wasn't the same. Apparently, he started bringing his own gun to work because of all the problems happening. And, you know, we're in Texas, we have lots of guns. And so, you know, no one can stop you from carrying if you have a license. But the problem was that it was just, he was kind of,
if you're nervous and if you're nervous and you've got a gun, it's not great.
Oh yeah. And that's exactly what basically led to his, you know, being let go. It's just that at one point there was a belligerent patient, you know, arguing about something at the register. And then one of the other techs overheard Wayne say, if she doesn't shut up, you know, this next bullet's for her. And it was like, okay, Wayne, we got to get HR on the phone and we got to talk about this. So anyway, so yeah, that was a heck of a highlight.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked on the podcast to a school student who survived a shooting and her mother as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's a really alien thing, I think, for me in Ireland, which is a very like, I totally understand it's a privileged thing because we just don't have guns here. Like,
fair enough.
There is guns in like gangs and things like that, and you know, but like you wouldn't come across one definitely in your sort of everyday life. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's just not as big a fear, I guess, or not as big as a likelihood. Like it does happen, mm-hmm. obviously, but
yeah,
it's just. Yeah, and just even the fact that your guy, the peace officer, had one, like, and like, you know, we hear a lot of the arguments over here is like, what if, you know, we need good guys to have guns to protect the bad guys, but like, obviously, in your case, that was kind of true.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So, and I didn't realize that the guy who worked there was going to end up. I thought it was going to, the guards were going to come, or the police, sorry, were going to come and mm-hmm. shoot the guy. But Jesus, someone in your work had to deal with that himself. And then how was he? I mean, what is a peace officer, actually, I should say, just to clarify for the other Irish people listening. Is it like,
yeah,
do they get any training, or is it just that you're allowed to carry a gun, or what does it actually mean?
Well, basically, I think, I'd have to do a quick internet search on this to verify. But basically, from what I understand, you know, Johnny had worked in, you know, public service for a long time. And so I think just in serving in that capacity, you have to be able to learn some things, be trained on certain things. And so he just happens to, you know, get the extra requisites in place so that he's allowed to carry a gun. And because he's still a public servant, he's still able to carry that. So whether it's on a personal or professional level, he's able to carry a weapon for himself.
And it's mad that the guy came in Kevlar. Like, he obviously, it was planned. It wasn't like I'm mad that I got turned away. Like, it was a plan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very, yeah. The fact that it's that deliberate is, you know, everything in, you know, robberies don't just happen by accident, right? I mean, maybe like shoplifting. They're like, you know what? I'll take this. No one's looking. But anytime you have to use guns and Kevlar and, you know, unmarked vehicles, yeah, this is going to be. And the fact that someone could really think all this through and say, oh, you know, this is the what gives me the highest chance of success of actually going through with this robbery is pretty nuts.
And do you find that experience traumatic? So I know you, it must have been scary to like hear gunshots, know there were gunshots, and then just sort of have to wait.
Oh, yeah.
And then obviously to see that on the way out must have been fairly traumatic.
Oh, yeah. No, the team definitely wasn't the same after that, because they basically, the company was kind enough to give anyone who was on site during the robbery, like the next day off, they just had a skeleton crew come in and cover, you know, up until people were felt okay coming back to work. And they didn't give a mandatory timetable for anybody to be like, okay, you have to be back at work by this time or that time. But there were some people who just kind of ghosted the company after that, because they were like, I didn't sign up for this, right? They're just like, I got to find a quote safer job. And yeah, I mean, I was at a crossroads myself with my own career. And I just said, you know, I'm not interested in dispensing high profile meds anymore because of all the scrutiny that comes with it. And I definitely don't want to work in a dangerous area as well. And so that was just part of the career arc, the roller coaster that I was in the middle of at the time. And so for me, yeah, like I ended up getting reassigned, or at least I had to find work in another city through the same company, because they could only pay me 8 hours a week shortly after they told me, hey, we like you and we want to keep you around, but this is all that we can pay you right now. And so I ended up going to work for them in Austin, which is about 2 hours away from Houston. And it was a much safer store, thankfully. But I knew it was still a while before I could transition on from that company, because I had so few job options at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you've moved on now, you're a career coach, did you say?
So I can help my clients with their career paths. That's actually most of the questions I've gotten with the clients that I've had. They just say, hey, you know, either I have trouble having a conversation with my boss about my role with the company, or, you know, I'm just upset with my boss for the way he's treating me. How do I engage my boss without antagonizing him or possibly getting fired, things like that. So yeah, the transition from pharmacy to coaching goes something like this, where initially when I finished school, I took my mom's advice, for better or worse, about just finding a stable job. My mom, even though she'd never worked a day in her life in pharmacy, insisted that she knew what was best for me. And so, you know, insisted that I work for this large chain pharmacy and just bank away money for 20 years. And just doesn't matter how unfair they treat me or anything else like that, just the benefits and 401k were always going to be better than whatever quality of life I had in mind for myself. So I just need to just keep my head down and just do what they told me. And after 5 years of that, I said, nope, I can't do this anymore. I don't care if you've given me, I just earned a third week of vacation, but I said, you know, if the other 49 still suck, it's just not a good trade-off. So what happened was I initially wanted to get into teaching students, and I didn't have a residency or a PhD because I just was happy, you know, working for the chain at the time, I'd gotten comfortable. And so when I wanted to teach, I didn't have anything to show that I would be good at teaching. But a friend who worked for a pharmacy consulting company said, hey, you know, you can teach through us if you're interested. And my old position is open now that I'm promoted. So if you want to apply for this, let me know. And so I threw my hat in the ring, walked away from a full-time job with benefits to take a part-time job teaching and try to earn my way in. And so I was living in Tennessee at the time, moved down to Houston specifically for this job. And, you know, initially I was just so excited. I thought this would be the last company I'd ever have to work for. 11 months later, I get fired. And yeah, that was, it was unfortunate because it was such a great opportunity with a great company. And I didn't want to admit to myself that I had thrown away the opportunity. The simple answer is that I like the idea of being an instructor more than being doing the work of actually being a good instructor. And plus, if you don't get along with your supervisor, it doesn't matter how good you do, you're probably not going to stick around. And that's when things got really interesting because, you know, I had no connections. I didn't know where to look for work next. And so that's when I ended up at an independent pharmacy, which ended up being the House of Cards. And four of my paychecks were bouncing as I was filling for crooked doctors. And so, yeah, like my boss was just not good news. It was between all the lies and, you know, the fact that I could get trouble for my license and he was making all this money that he was withholding unfairly. I had a very well-meaning but misguided view of grace at that point, where I was like, well, even if he doesn't hold up his end of the bargain, let me go honor mine. And everyone's like, Jerry, if you can't pay your bills and he's not paying you, you need to leave. And I was like, okay, maybe in hindsight, that would have been the better decision. And so that was kind of where the QVL where opportunity came in, where my friend said, okay, let's get you out of that job. Got me on with this pay management company, except that, yeah, you know, survived the robbery attempt and, you know, didn't know financially where I was going to be. I didn't know what my life was going to look like. And so it was that summer in Austin later that year, where I was actually asked to help out teaching some leadership workshops through a pharmacy nonprofit that some of my friends run. And it's something interesting because before with leadership, you know, before I said, oh, I could never be a good leader. I struggled at it. I don't know if I could ever be good at it. So it's just not worth the headache. I just don't want to do it. But after teaching leadership, it started to open up possibilities for me in my own thinking, right? It was just kind of like, well, what if I could be a good leader? You know, what would that look like? How would I carry myself if I were an effective leader? And so that was more of the same try, struggle, fail. I had the opportunity to either stay part-time in Austin or come back to Houston full-time in a manager position. And I said, well, you know, I love my team in Austin, but I know I can't stay safe. And so I'm going to come home to Houston because Houston felt like home at this point, and I'm going to take on the manager position. And even worse was that shortly after that, about, you know, 3 or 4 months later, I actually got written up by management because they were not happy with my leadership. My technicians were acting out of line. And I was struggling with conflict. I struggled to write them up or let alone fire people. And so they said, well, you know, that is a problem. And as long as you're not handling that problem, well, your passivity is also a problem. And so I had to get better really quickly. So the tough thing with QVL was that they had some more drama with the DEA, which led to the owners pulling their funding. So that's a fun story, which can also impact. Basically, yeah, right. So you're just like, you got bonuses all over this hour. And so the crazy thing with QVL is that, so we had, at the time we had, at its biggest point, they had 8 stores in Texas and 2 in Louisiana. And so the Louisiana stores, what happened was, is that the DEA raided a bunch of pharmacies in Louisiana. And it turns out they were all supplied by the same wholesaler. And the DEA goes to this wholesaler who also supplied our QVL. And they said, hey, you know, we are looking at this data of dispensing and this is really bad. Like there's clearly no level of discretion that you're showing when you're dispensing stock to these, you know, pharmacies to move on to patients. So what are you going to do about it? And so this company hits the panic button and just says, okay, we're just going to cut off the top 200 controlled substance ordering pharmacies on our client list. Just point blank, doesn't matter what they're doing or what kind of vetting process they have. We just need to get numbers down. So we're just going to cut these off. And so for about 5 days before QVL could intervene and show them, hey, look, no, we check our patients' profiles. We do our homework. We don't dispense anything unless, you know, they clear our standards. For about 5 days, neither of these stores in Louisiana could actually make any money because they couldn't get stock. And so you can't sell what you don't have, right? And so all the other pharmacies in Texas, corporate told us, hey, just send what you can until, you know, whatever limits are allowable, just send them stock so they can at least keep make some money to stay afloat. And at that point, the owners said, you know what, we've decided that this is no longer sustainable. So we're just going to pull funding. And so all of a sudden, you know, I was still in the doghouse at the time. And so when my friend who had gotten me on with the company, you know, broke this news to me, you know, he's like, man, I didn't know if, how you're going to react if I told you this. I was afraid to even tell you. And I said, well, thank you for following through, you know, because it took some friends giving him the courage, but I know you got to be honest with Jerry about, you know, where the company is. And so I told him, look, it hasn't changed. Like, I was already looking for another job even before you gave me this information. So my situation hasn't changed. Like, I'm still looking for another job. And so the crazy thing is that the only reason I got another interview with a random job opportunity I found through a recruiter was that I had managerial experience on my resume now. Right. And I said, wow, that was a really good decision. Just, you know, taking on the challenges of leadership. And so that company was a lot safer, but it only lasted 11 months because the doctors who were associated with the pharmacy weren't making any money. Like, their margins were terrible and they struggled to convert patients over to from the regular pharmacy over to the doctor's pharmacy. And so, you know, what I like to tell people is that, you know, leadership saved my career. It gave me job options I wouldn't have had access to previously. But the problem is, just because you have more icebergs, they're still icebergs, right? And, you know, they melt after about 1 or 2 years. And it's like, okay, when my previous job went under about 4 years ago, similar challenges, just insurance problems, just took them down. And I said, well, you know, I'm tired of chasing scripts. I'm tired of, you know, fighting insurance companies and dictating how much I'm worth. But I love teaching these leadership workshops. So, you know, what would a career look like, you know, helping people develop the way I wish I had known to be developed, you know, early on in my career. And so I had the idea about becoming a coach, but still struggled with, you know, how to start, didn't know how to open a business, build a business, run a business. I still, in a lot of ways, don't, but, you know, I'm still trying to move that forward. But yeah, so that's the transition from pharmacy into coaching for conflict and leadership, because I see the need. I know I have a heart for developing people, and yeah, I mean, I could still be involved in healthcare, but it won't be as a regular community pharmacist anymore. So yeah, but you know, there's plenty of robbery stories I can share with you otherwise.
Yeah, you seem to have lots of ups and downs in that pharmacy mm-hmm. career anyway.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's probably a quieter life, at least. You don't have to worry
about it. It's still crazy. Yeah, yeah. Fewer DEA visits, thankfully. Yeah. But here's what's crazy. Like, just because the current pharmacy I work at doesn't do a lot of high-profile meds, but as long as it's a pharmacy, it's the thief's perceived value of what's in your pharmacy. And so we actually had our pharmacy broken into during COVID, like about 2 or 3 in the morning. I got a call from my boss. They're like, hey, can you go meet the cops down there? Cause like someone pried open the door and just look for stuff. And yeah, thankfully they didn't get anything of value, but yeah, it was just a headache because they, you know, they damaged the doors and all these other things that we had to get cleaned up. But yeah, it's just frustrating when you have a commodity and, you know, you're just like, can't I just sell like widgets online or something like that? You know, just something where people, you just hide it in a blank warehouse and nobody knows of anything valuable, instead of a pharmacy that's just like, okay, this is a pharmacy. They probably have pain meds. We're going to go find them. And it's like, ugh, yeah, it's a rough time.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, happy to do so.
Would you like to remind everyone where to find you, how they can connect with you online?
Certainly. Yeah. If you want to find me on LinkedIn, that's the easiest thing. Just look for Jerry Fu. Otherwise, if you want more substantive things, you can go to www.adaptingleaders.com. As I said previously, I now have a free PDF download. Just provide your email address and you get a download on how to handle difficult conversations, whether it's with a boss or a colleague or even a family member. The framework should still work. And you can also get a free 30-minute consult, no strings attached, just to say, hey, you know what, Jerry, I'm working through a problem, or here, I want to share a bit of my journey. And just let me know how I can be a resource and encouragement for you guys.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jerry.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to the podcast. If you choose to watch or listen, please subscribe on YouTube if you choose to watch it. And if you listen on the audio platforms, please give us a review, because it really helps us out in the old rankings on the charts. And yeah, thank you so much, Jerry, and I'll see you in the next one.
All right, see you next time.
This podcast was brought to you by The Shift. For more like this, check out theshift.ie.